men are consummate snowball artists. They use sense and nerve gases to induce hallucinations. People think they're seeing ghosts. And they call these bozos who conveniently show up to deal with the problem with a fake electronic light show.
Everything was fine with our system until the power grid was shut off by Dickless here.
They caused an explosion.
Is this true?
Yes, it's true. This man has no dick.
All right, all right, all right. Well, that's what I heard. And are you ready for the show? Yeah, we're ready, Lucy. Please start. And so I started.
Hi, everybody. This is Eugenie Bondurant. I play Tigress in The Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 2, and you're listening to The Homemade Broadcast.
Personnel, this is CBTS. Space vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It is the Homemade Broadcast, HMP Radio, on RadioSaintPete.com. My name is Will Koontz. Welcome back to the program. I hope you're well. I'm doing good. Thanks, everybody, for coming out to the Hollander Show. It was fun. We raised a lot of money. Everybody got drunk. It was a lot of fun. If you missed it, sorry. I'm sure there'll be more. Hopefully, there will be more. I'm hoping. I would like to pick a new charity every time and, you know, do something nice for the community, while making people enjoy themselves by a pool. That would be good. That's my dream. I'm a simple man. I have a simple dream. Anyways, nice to be back with you. I have Jeff Klein, comedian Jeff Klein, joining us here shortly. And then I think I'm done with comedians for a while. Comedians are my bread and butter. That's who I like talking to the most, and who I feel like I can talk honestly with the majority of the time. But we're going to mix it up. I think next week I got a guy from the Times, the Tampa Bay Times, who did a collab piece with the podcast Radio Lab and WNYC about police shootings. I believe he's going to come by next week, and we're going to talk about police shootings. Switch it up. We're going to get a little political here. Hey, we still got stickers. We got a bunch of them. I got so many made, and I want them out of my house. So let me send you some for free. Send me an email to thehomemadebroadcast@radiosaintpete.com. Put your address there, P.O. Box, whatever, and I'll pay for the shipping. I'll send you a few stickers. Just make sure you put them on something. That'd be good. And make sure you keep up. Subscribe to the podcast. You know, I appreciate you listening wherever you're listening, especially on Radio St. Pete. But, hey, why not subscribe on your phone? You got this podcast app. And you can subscribe, you can rate HMB Radio Tampa Bay, leave a review. That only takes, I mean, it takes a second. It really helps me out. If you could do that, I would appreciate it. Yeah, just look up HMB Radio Tampa Bay, Hotel Mike Bravo Radio. That's probably all you'll need, and it should pop up there. Wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, doesn't matter. Podcast Addict, I'm pretty sure it's on there, too. Yeah, I mean, that'd be nice of you. I like nice. Nice is nice. Make sure you keep up with us on Facebook, Radio St. Pete, on Facebook, and HMB Radio, easy enough. Same thing on Instagram and Twitter. Radio St. Pete's on Instagram and Twitter as well. Just Radio St. Pete, nothing special. And home_made_man for mine. So give us a follow on there. Comedian Jeff Klein will be here shortly. We got a new program, too, now that we're doing. We're teaming up with Side Splitters Comedy Club. So if you subscribe to the podcast, you might have saw that HMB Radio Side Splitters Spotlight we did with Ken Miller this past week. Hopefully that's going to be a weekly thing where we're kind of working with Side Splitters, kind of highlighting the act that's rolling through in the weekend. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So. And we got the City Hall broadcast as well with Benjamin Kirby, my man Ben, and Kevin King and myself do a podcast direct from City Hall where we have somebody in the community here from St. Pete. And this is, we actually do it at City Hall. And we talk about what they do in the city, and it's a lot of fun. So check that out. And you can also stream past episodes. Just go to cityhallbroadcast.net, and that'll pull you up to that page. I think we have probably close to 20 of them under our belt now, 15 to 20, I guess. So that's always fun. And, yeah, thanks for joining us this week. Let's get with my man Jeff Klein here on the Homemade Broadcast, heard on RadioSaintPete.com. Jeff Klein.
Yes, sir.
That is, I was just blanking on your last name. That is
that
it.
Is, that right? Is my last name.
Okay, good. I was a little worried there.
This has started off well.
Yes, yeah, yeah. First question for you. Have you ever snuck booze onto a cruise ship?
Yes.
What is your suggestion for doing so?
This was early on before. This is pre-9/11, so you can sneak booze anywhere.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that's one of the biggest things that's happened.
You just put it in a red Solo cup,
yeah,
and you could walk anywhere.
You were good to go.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I packed it in my bag. I packed it in my bag, packed it in like a pair of pants, in the leg of the pants, and just kind of let it go. Yeah.
Because I'm wondering, I'm going on a cruise next in like 3 weeks, and last time we went, we did the large bottle of Listerine. You know this trick?
Okay.
Where you dump it out, you go get a bottle of vodka, refill it, put some green food coloring in it. You keep the little plastic sleeve that goes over the cap.
Right.
And then you just put it in your bag. And I was surprised that, because it was four of us in this really tiny cabin room, like not even, we didn't have bedrooms, it was just a room with bunk beds in it,
right.
And all four of us had this giant thing of booze,
right?
And for some reason did not get flagged and didn't get thrown away. So then I'm thinking, I couldn't remember if I brought my bag myself or if somebody checked it and looked through it, and I'm thinking they must look through it because you could bring drugs and stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
because I was just like, I'll just put a bottle of booze in my bag, who
yeah.
cares.
I mean, like I said, I at least put it down like a pant leg so it wasn't just sitting in there. So if you just open it, you're not seeing anything necessarily.
Right.
But if they start rifling through,
they're going to feel it in your pant leg.
They're going to feel, yeah, like a fake leg in there.
And I'm sure they're old vets at this. I mean, these people who do this do it tons of times.
Yeah, but I don't think they can search every bag, right? Like that's
exhausting. A lot. That's probably how. They probably do take a sample size. They probably have the dog go over it with, like, make sure there's not Coke or something in your bag. But how would they even care if you took Coke on the bag or in the cruise ship? If you just take – now, I understand if you take it off the cruise ship at one of your stops or bring it back on from another country, perhaps that could be an issue. But, I mean, if you're bringing it on the boat, you're going to do it on the boat, right?
I mean, they do have late night activities, so I feel like that should be encouraged.
Yes, absolutely. It's fun. don't forget about that.
I think the rule of thumb on most illegal drugs on a cruise ship is you can bring as many as you want as long as they're already in your system.
So you have to. What does that include? Smuggling in places if it's in your body?
Well, it does now. It didn't initially when I said it, but now it 100% means that.
Now I know that would work.
Yeah.
Because they're not, I can't remember. See, now I'm paranoid though, because not that I'm going to smuggle cocaine on the boat, but I'm just paranoid with like the dogs and like, I don't know if they're going to like sniff you because like, it seems like it gets more and more strict every time.
Right.
Now, of course, you know, you have nothing to worry about if you don't have anything.
Right. But that's boring.
Right. But and then you just think about it, and it gets in your head, and then I'll look guilty because I'm just thinking about what it would be like if that happened. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but, I mean, I say smuggle it in the bag. What's the worst that happens? They throw out the bottle, right? I mean, you're not.
Right.
It's not
yeah,
like they
that's
kick
it.
You off the boat.
No, I don't think there's any penalties like that. I think they'll probably you know what I bet you'll do? They'll just keep it and then give it back to you when you leave.
I'd rather be like an ex-girlfriend finding out that you cheated, right? And it's just like they throw all your shit onto the dock as you're pulling away, mm-hmm. and you're looking out your window like, wait, isn't that all my clothes?
That's my Tito's vodka.
Yeah, what? why are they just emptying it all out there?
Yeah.
And they're like, you tried to lie to me. Like, that's what I want it to be like, just a huge overreaction that way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know you can bring a bottle of wine. Bring one bottle of wine with you.
That seems prejudiced, that you can bring wine, but you can't bring vodka.
Yeah. I mean, who cares? I don't understand what the big deal about this is, but yeah, I'm excited. I haven't been on a vacation.
Where are you headed to?
We're going on a doing a dudes cruise. Okay. Me and my few buddies, three other dudes, and we're going to the Bahamas.
Okay.
It's just a 3-day one.
Right.
Like last time I went, we did the 7-day, you know, and we were stuck in this room.
That's a lot.
It was too much. By day 4, I wanted to go home so bad. And I'm looking, you know, at this I'm in Belize looking at this, you know, beautiful landscape, beautiful beach. I'm just like, I just want to go home.
Well, that's like, I think people, they overthink it. Like, people think 7 days in Vegas is a good idea, and it's not.
No.
It's just not a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. That's a 3, maybe 4 day.
At the most, if you go sightseeing to, like, Red Rocks, you could say 4 days.
Right.
But actually, in Vegas, you should be exhausted by day 2.
Yeah.
And
it's nonstop partying. I went Vegas. I went, my girlfriend at the time's aunt and uncle actually took me and her sister and her boyfriend. We all went to Vegas. I had just turned 21, I think. So I was ready to party.
Right.
Jess was 19 at the time. So she couldn't really do anything.
Right.
And, we fought the whole time because I wanted to go have fun and she couldn't do anything.
That makes sense.
So I was just like, so, you know, I can drink and gamble. So, you know, I was hoping she'd be like, yes, I understand. But she was like, no, that's not how it works. You have to hang out with me. I'm like, what?
Oh.
So yeah, we fought the whole time, but still together like a year after that. So we made it that long at least
to
22. Yeah. So Jeff Klein is a comic here in the Tampa Bay area. I think this is my last comic podcast for a little while. I need to take a break.
I'll finish it out. Well, good.
Yeah. I mean, there'll be more, of course. That's my bread and butter. I like to talk to the Tampa comics.
We don't have a lot going on with our lives. We're here for you whenever you need us.
That's been the case usually. Yeah. People are like, yeah, I can come whenever.
Yeah.
Like, really? Whenever? Oh, yeah. I'll figure it out. No big deal. So how long have you been doing comedy here?
I've been comedy for...
I am comedy.
I've been breathing comedy for coming up on 3 years since I first did it on stage.
Where was your first time? Did you do Coconuts?
No. First time was out of town. So first time, I was on a vacation.
Oh, that's a good strategy.
It was the best strategy.
Yeah.
I was on a vacation up in Provincetown in Boston. My boyfriend and I were up there with some friends that live up there, and they asked us what's new. And I said, I'm thinking about doing stand-up comedy when I get back home. I'm thinking about maybe going to an open mic and checking it out.
Was this just like a bar or a comedy club?
It was like a comedy club up there, and my friend worked there, and he, later on in the afternoon, he was like, oh, by the way, I've got you set up for a 5-minute set this Wednesday at the club I work at, so just bring your best 5 minutes. And I was like, so I need to write five minutes.
Yeah, I gotta
okay, that's what I'm doing the first part of my vacation.
Right.
Is writing 5 minutes. So it was fun though. So I wrote 5 minutes. I obsessed over it. I had a really tight 5 because I didn't want to go over. My first time on stage. And the day that I was supposed to do it, I took a shower. I came back into the room and my boyfriend was reading through my notes and he hadn't seen them yet. And he goes, so these are the jokes you're doing? I was like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh, I mean, no, they're funny, but I would cut all of this stuff out. I don't think any of this is going to play. And just rewrite it about the town. And I'm like, you know, it's tonight, right?
Yeah, it's what's done. And did you write, like, long form? Did you write exactly what you were going to say?
I wrote exactly what I was going to say, and I read it. I paced around, like, getting the timing down. But then I did cut a bunch of it, and I rewrote a bunch of it, just making fun of the town itself to cover. Because I had some bit about lizards, and apparently – lizards aren't going to play well in Boston because they haven't seen a lizard. They don't know what the hell that is.
Right.
So I rewrote. He made a good point, sadly, so I had to listen. And it was fun. It was like 7 people in the audience, 8 people. So, you know, it's like an open mic night. And then half of them were lesbians, and I made lesbians laugh. And I thought, this is a win.
That's a tough thing to do.
I'm going to take this as a win.
Yeah, 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 for sure. So that was your first time, and then when you came back, you were like, I'm going to do this again.
Yeah, when I came back, I was like, let me start checking out some open mics. I started doing, like, the coffee shop open mics, and then I found out that there's comedy club open mics, and I was like, that makes more sense to me, so I started doing those. But it's funny, the thing I love about coffee shop open mics, and this is – it annoys me, but I love this about it, because if you do a coffee shop open mic – everybody's polite at a coffee shop, and you get a mixed genre there, we'll say. So what I love is, like, if a 12-year-old boy is playing his guitar about his broken up girlfriend, right?
Yeah.
And you listen to the whole song and everybody applauds at the end and it's sweet. And then like a 21-year-old Asian girl does this cello concerto, right? And everybody claps at the end. And then a comic can go up there who's just starting out and tell jokes and nobody laughs the whole time. But everybody claps at the end of the set, and
yeah.
I find it the most, like, condescending clapping ever. But it's just what you do at a coffee shop.
Right, right, right. Yeah, it's not a comedy crowd. It's not, they're not really prepared for those things are so tough because I feel like we're doing the, or I guess by the time this airs, we did the Hollander Hotel.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
the
by the pool side, yeah.
Which is cool, but it's going to be at, like, 5 p.m.
Yeah.
Which comedy in daylight just... Ugh.
It's a weird combination.
Feels cringy to me, but that's what we got, so that's what we're gonna do. But yeah, the mixed open mics, I don't like those. I can't watch an Asian girl play good player cello or a
and
little
then
boy
somebody get up and tell jokes. It's a weird mix.
Yeah, yeah. I just that just seems awful to me. Do you prefer those as opposed to the comedy club?
Oh no. I loathe to doing them. But
do you do them still?
Not really, no.
On occasion?
On occasion, I'll still get up to, there's one in Tampa, I don't know, whatever night, and a small little coffee shop. I can't believe I'm forgetting the name of it right now.
Is it the one in Ybor?
No, it's right downtown Tampa, whatever it is.
Yeah, that's not
but
weird.
It's it's small, it's fun, you get good jokes, you're right. The thing about, you're really right next to I mean, the people listening to you.
Yeah.
So that's awkward when they're not laughing and they can touch you. It just makes it a little bit more. But it hones it, you know. If you can do that, then you can do, you know, a room where you have 100 people that are ready to laugh. It's so much easier.
Right.
So the awkwardness helps make you better, I think.
Yeah. I had played with the idea of maybe starting a mixed mic because there are, I mean, there's only, like, when I was doing the mics down here, all of a sudden, there's no mics. There's Iberian Rooster and 439.
Yeah.
That's it. There was a bunch of them for a little while. So I toyed with the idea of maybe switching it up to do a mixed mic because it might get, you know, a more diverse crowd in there. And then I was like, that is a terrible idea. I'd rather just not do it because I don't want to have to put up with watching, you know, the Asian girl. You know?
But that's, I mean, and that's the weird thing about mixed mics is that you don't know, like, your audience is going there, but, you know, some of them are going there just for music and they're like, oh, I got to listen to this guy talk.
Yeah.
Or somebody's going for the comedy, and they're like, oh, well, this bitch showed up. Come on.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's that, you know, your audience gets confused as to why they're there, too. So it gets – I get the necessity of them, but I prefer to just stick to
– Yeah, I mean, even mics at bars are tough.
Mics at bars are tough because people usually at bars, especially mics at bars with TVs, are really tough.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I get distracted doing my set watching the TV, and I realize that if I care more about what's on TV, there's no way I'm getting the audience on my side.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we had Yard of Ale going for a while, and
It
was football season, Thursday night football.
Yeah.
And I actually wrote a thing for Sub App when Sub App was still around. I don't think it's around anymore at this point, but it's the comedy off season during football season because you got football Thursday, college on Friday, college Saturday, pros Sunday, and Monday night game. That's 5 days of football.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
So you got comedy for Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
That's
which
about
are nights
it.
Everybody wants to go out and see
exactly.
Comedy, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, at least Sly Bar was on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
So at least I had that cooking, but, you know, that ran its course, too.
Yeah, but that should, I mean.
I can't ask her, like, what mic has been around for 2 years.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And it always seemed a good crowd there.
Yeah, I mean, towards the end, it kind
of. I mean, the scattering of times I went, it seemed like a good crowd there.
Oh yeah, I mean, for a little while there, when
it was good.
Yeah, when they remodeled and did the kitchen, we couldn't do the up top.
Yeah.
Did you ever go when it was on top?
Oh, absolutely. I went a couple times when it was up top.
That was cool.
It was different.
Yeah, way different. But then once they moved it to the corner,
right.
it was never the same. That's what I blame it on.
Right.
Because I feel like nobody wanted to sit right next to the comic telling jokes, and they had that big long table where everybody sat at.
Yeah, that's true.
And then if you're at the bar, you would have to turn your head at a really awkward angle to see. It just killed. It's just the location killed it.
I think
that's what I'm blaming anyway.
It's fair. I think one of the issues with open mics right now, and it's a good and bad issue, is there's so many comics in the area, which is great.
Good. Yeah.
And a lot of them are super supportive and will go up and support their friends, which, again, it's a great community. I'm so happy to be a part of it. But if you go to a mic and it's 30 comics at it, like the first time I did Iberian Rooster, it ran 3.5 hours.
Yeah, way too long.
And that's, I mean, your crowd changes over 2-3 times. It just becomes.
But you got to limit. I mean, you got to limit it.
That's just it. And then you feel, and then all of a sudden you're a jerk.
Right.
Whoever's running that mic is a jerk because they limited it to 15 comics. Well, that's not right. But unfortunately, like, that's what has to be done.
It's basic economics, man.
Yeah.
It's supply and demand. You know, we can't. We got to get people home. I wanted to be done with Slybar by 11 at the latest.
Right.
I wanted to be done because it's a Tuesday night. You know, even 11 is pushing it for a lot of people. So you do other stuff besides comedy too. You do acting. You said you had your own media company.
I do other stuff. Yeah, I do some video production. I've done a few short films. Had one that I was director of photography in that made it into Gasparilla Film Festival. No, wait, Sunscreen Film Festival.
That's
one
cool.
One in each. I can't remember.
What was it about?
I have an actor friend of mine, director friend of mine, who wrote and directed a couple short films. They just got really dark films.
Okay.
One was about a woman who hires a guy to kill her boyfriend, kind of the tale of that. And it was kind of a play on an old Western style. You know, you hired the hired gun to go take care of business. And the other one was about this this guy who is grown up now, big strapping guy, who goes back to confront the preacher that molested him. And ends up killing the wrong person.
Uh-oh.
Spoiler alert if you ever see it. That's the wrong priest. So really heavy, dark, fun stuff that comics should get involved in.
Well, it's good. It kind of spreads your... I think secretly every comic wants to be an actor. And vice versa, I think, for that matter.
Well, it's funny. Before I was doing comedy, I got into acting. I did a lot of acting classes. And one of the reasons I do comedy now instead of acting, I was going out for a lot of roles. I've been in a few independent films, short and feature length. I have an Internet Movie Database page. I don't mean to brag. but one of the things is in the classes, I became good friends with some of these actors, and I'm watching what they do for acting. And they really give themselves to it. And they really kind of pull from these deep emotions. And I'm impressed as anything watching that. And it dawns on me, I am never going to be that. Like, I get the emotion I should be doing. And I can act it out, but I'm not going to pull from... I just couldn't bring myself to care enough to pull from the dark memories to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got on stage once, and I did comedy, and I was like, wait, I just have to be myself on stage and just tell stories. All right, this makes more sense to me. Like, that felt more natural than watching and being impressed with what they were going to do and knowing that's not me.
Yeah.
So, like,
I think that's a dynamic there then, because they're kind of opposites, polar opposites of yin and yang of each other. So you want the other side, and you're probably not good at it. Most actors aren't good comedians, and most comedians aren't good actors. But
it's very true. Yeah, it's very
one
true.
One and the same. Yeah.
Yeah, it takes a lot for both, but I mean, they're very different disciplines on it. I've learned that the hard way.
Yeah, I almost feel like you have to be a shell, like not have a personality to be a good actor.
Yeah, well, I mean, you really have to, I don't know, you have to be very open to, like, letting so many things affect you, whereas it seems that, like, as a comic, you're really more talking about how things affect you. You're talking it out on stage as opposed to literally letting it affect you and take its toll on you, and that's what really great acting is, from what I've seen.
I almost feel like you have to be like a sociopath, where you have to have no emotion, and you have to have a director or a person tell you what you're feeling, and you're so good at just faking these emotions that you can just tap into it whenever you want.
I don't know. I have found...
Just a theory. I don't know if that's true.
It's not from what I've seen, it's deeply disturbed individuals.
Yeah.
Who have had horrible things happen to them that go, that in maybe a sociopathic way go, that's right. I remember when my sister killed my kitten and how that made me feel when I was 7.
I can be somebody else. I don't have to be
I can cry on cue now, remembering that, when I'm supposed to be doing this scene. And I'm like, how do you juggle that in your head? That makes no sense to me. So, yeah, I tagged. Now I do I'll occasionally still do a random infomercial, which I've done like 13, 14 of them.
For what? Is it one particular thing?
No, it's all types of... I'm like the guy that can't carry 9 paint rollers down a hallway.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because nobody should be able... But I'm like, oh, I can't do that. And they put a red X on
yeah,
me.
Yeah, right. There's this subreddit. Do you do Reddit at all? It's called Where Did the Soda Go? And it's just GIFs of those infomercial things of people, you know, screwing up wildly.
Yeah. I was that character a lot, and there was... It's funny, I did enough of them with this one local company that, like, one year I was in this office cubicle, and you're putting this block of ice on your portable fan, and it's like an AC in your office. It's fantastic. And so it's that kind of hero scene of, I feel so much better now. And then, like, a year later, I'm doing another infomercial for them. They set me up in the same fake cubicle that they had, except this time I was, like, microwaving steaks for myself on this microwave griddle type thing.
How depressing.
And it was so funny because they said to me, they were like, as they get the whole scene set up, they were like, oh man, this is depressing. I was like, what? They were like, you're still at the same job a year later, the same cubicle. You haven't advanced at all. I was like, I didn't even think about that, but now I'm sad.
That's a good point. Yeah. So you're not doing any acting anymore? Just kind of?
Not really, no. It's
something also, maybe you come back to? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always up for it. I did a play last year. Friends approached me, wanting to be a part of it, and I'm always up for it. It's always fun. But I definitely like doing movies more than plays. I've done a couple plays, and they take way too much talent and effort and work, and that's just not me. I've realized that. It's a lot.
I had a buddy of mine say, which I would have never thought in a million years. This guy would have been a guy, like an actor, like a stage actor. Just didn't seem like that type of guy.
Right.
He was doing community theater at some place on the South Side. And I was just like, man, I didn't know you were so talented.
Right.
Like, is a lot of work. I mean, doing a stage play.
Wait until you see him on stage before you call him talented. But well, I get
true.
What you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of work. Like, the rehearsals that you must have to do. There's no cuts. There's none of that.
Yeah, so I did kind of movie acting before I did like real stage acting as an adult. And then when I did the stage acting, I did like a small play and it was just me and one other guy on stage for like a 30-minute play. And I was like, there's nowhere to go. It's all you on stage all the time. And if somebody forgot their lines, like my co-star did a lot, there's no like cut, let's do that over. Now, I love doing a movie because it was, hey, these are the scenes we're doing today. I was like, all right, great. Those are the lines I need to know today.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Yeah. That seems way easier.
It was so easy.
But plays seem like I had to miss my buddy's one because I was working, but I was like, whew, thank God. Because a play just seems so boring. I can't imagine sitting through a play. Holy moly.
It's funny. It's hard for me to drag people out to see me do comedy. Because that's what true friends do. They support you on Facebook.
Yes.
And Facebook only.
I have a lot of that, yeah.
And, yeah, I always felt bad, like, hey, I'm doing a play. You should come out and see it. But occasionally they would. I had somebody come out 3 times with the same play, which was fun because this was the play that we forgot lines a lot in. So every time you saw it, it was a different play. Like, we'd skip 1 to 20 pages in the script any night. So that at least made it interesting each time.
Yeah, right. Jeff Klein's on the Homemade Broadcast this week. So when you had those moments where you're on stage and then you blank, you just got to improv your way through it, right? And hopefully it'll click back to you. What's the process for that?
For me, it was terror. Like on stage doing plays, it's kind of that terror. It's kind of hoping that somebody will give you a cue as to what's happening. You fidget around a little bit. You, depending on the scene, you kind of play into, if you're supposed to be uncomfortable, you make it uncomfortable, and then you just hope it comes back to you, or you just go with the next line that pops in your head. And then on stage telling jokes, it's so much easier to forget your place because people laugh at you forgetting your place, and you just move on to the next joke.
Right.
And you're just like, I'm going to take that laugh as a laugh, and I'm going on to the next.
Yeah. So you do acting, you do comedy. How would you describe your comedy to people? Do you have a theme that you go by, or?
It's very observational comedy. It's funny. For me personally, I kind of have two sides of my comedy. I have the general observational side, kind of the issue with what's happened with Gatorade flavors to Why do we have garages if we just don't ever put cars in them and fill them up? That type stuff. And then I have this whole other side of my comedy where I talk about me being gay and I talk about the gay community. And then, again, it's observational, but it's just kind of making fun of the stereotypes and myself and how I may or may not fit into them. So,
give me an example of that. What is an absurdity of the gay community, especially here? Because I know there are quite a few.
There's so many here. So kind of a newer joke and a current joke talking about the absurdity of the gay community that I focus on and that I had to realize later that I learned on. I have a joke about being fluent and flamboyant. Mm. Like you have to learn new phrases for words that you already knew. You know,
right.
So like, because I'll be around friends and they'll say, when, you know, they're reading somebody or what's the T, and I'm like, no, but seriously, what does all of that mean? I had to play catch up so much and it's just so much to learn. And so I kind of laugh at the absurdity of like, there's so many phrases.
Why don't
that
you
know
those
know.
Terms?
Well, they didn't actually give me a manual when.
Right. Yeah. Well, is it because you don't really hang with those people, or
it's kind of a hit or miss thing. It's because although, like, yes, I'm gay, it seems like a lot of the terminology comes from maybe like the drag queen community and kind of the club kid community, but it passes on into the gay community, then it passes on into the straight community.
Right.
And so I just try to catch it before it gets to the straight community so I can seem a little bit on edge still. But, yeah, I don't know, because at the end of the day, I'm still just me, and I'm kind of just a boring guy who watches sports, works a lot, and sits at home and watches Modern Family. So if it's not in any of those things, I tend to miss it.
Right. Have you found any advantages or disadvantages to being gay in comedy?
Like maybe I thought you were just going to leave it at, like, just at being gay. I was like, well, I mean, there's some advantages, yeah. Not yet. People keep telling me that as a gay comic that there's definitely a niche for me and that when I hit that, like, I'll, you know, gay clubs, et cetera, you know, I just got asked last Sunday, are you getting booked at a lot of gay clubs? And I was like, no, I'm not getting booked anywhere. Like, it'd be great anywhere I got booked. So in theory, down the road, it could be an advantage. But, you know, as of right now, it's just turns into an interesting night when I do the jokes. I get a goal of seeing how uncomfortable people are sometimes, being kind of me being upfront about being gay and then making jokes about it type thing. And then my goal by the end of my set is to have them laughing at the jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's a little bit of a win for me whenever I get to do it. So.
Do you ever have trouble relating to the audience because of that?
Not really.
Or having them relate to you?
Possibly having them to relate to me a little bit, especially on those jokes. But it's written in such a way that, you know, like I say, I talk about the absurdity of some of it, and I think that's relatable all around. I talk about the fact that I'm not the best gay. and I think, you know, like that.
Who's the best gay in the world, if you were to pick one?
Oh, man. Picking the Tim Gunn on
okay, that's
Project
a good,
I'm going to
yeah,
say
that's
probably
choice.
The best. I mean, well-dressed, well-spoken, seems hip for as old as he is.
Yep.
I feel like I'm going to go with that's the best gay. and then maybe Elton John.
Oh, Elton John's good.
Because I feel like...
Not the handsomest dude, though.
No, not handsome at all.
Very talented,
like,
though.
And super snarky. And I think you want your gays to be snarky.
Sure. Yeah.
I think that's like a, you know, that's a stereotype that we want to stay true.
to keep going.
And that works.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah, I mean, that's got to be a little different. Have you found any hard being accepted, even in the with comedians and stuff like that?
Not so much with comedians. I think for the most part, most comedians have been pretty good about it. I find that I overthink things myself. Like, I used to go to Pasco to go to an open mic that Mike Lee used to host, the Winner Circle. And it was...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sure. it was cool, but it was one of those things that... Every time I went there, and this is when I was still working on new material, and I wasn't where I'm at now, and I never thought I could try my gay material out there because it was Pasco, and I wanted to be able to go home.
Mm-hmm.
So I do get in my head sometimes about, like, what jokes can I do based on audience, or at least I used to a lot, and I try to I'm trying to get out of that and just
knowing
that funny
is funny. Do you think that's mostly in your head?
Possibly.
You just don't know because you haven't done
it. Well, that's just it. You know,
right.
it's you know, it's all in my head until it's a hate crime. And then it's not in my head anymore. Yeah. So it's that balance of like, but yeah, no, I don't think it's been anything. Like I said,
I mean, here's a perfect spot.
Yeah. Yeah. And the comic community has been great. But it is weird. I did a roast battle at, this really kind of dive bar in Tampa.
Oh, this was that Brass Mug, right?
At Brass Mug.
Yeah, Taurus's thing.
Taurus's thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And very urban crowd, I think is the PC, the comedian term
yeah.
for it. Right?
Everybody knows what that means, right. Yeah.
And so what was funny was first round, I'm up against this girl, and she kind of calls me gay, and I decide what I'm going to do.
Did she know?
No,
oh,
not at all.
She just went for it.
And okay. So I decided in that moment.
That's a pretty common thing that people go after.
Yeah, so I was like, I can ignore it, or I could just lean into it.
Yeah.
So I decided to lean into it and just, let's just see what happens. So I said, you know, you're calling me gay, but the fact is I am. If I wasn't meeting you, I would be gay. And I kind of went with that. I did a couple more gay references type thing. And then the interesting thing to me was after that, in between the two rounds, I'm in the bathroom and I'm at the urinal. This 60-some-year-old African-American man is peeing next to me at the urinal. And, you know, in my head, overthinking, I'm like, well, you know, I don't know how the urban crowd takes me being gay, this and that. The guy just goes, you're hilarious. Just so you know, man, it's going to be you and that Vietnamese girl in the final. Which was funny because he was talking about my friend Natasha. Who I think
oh,
is,
yes. Yeah. She's Lebanese or something.
Yeah. And I didn't think that was the time to correct him on where
she's
from.
Oh, that's great. I love that a black guy did that too.
Yeah.
Thank God it wasn't a white guy. Jesus.
Yeah. So I was like, at some point, funny was just funny, and I liked that about that moment. I was like, this guy doesn't care that I'm gay,
doesn't care what country
she's from.
Exactly, yeah.
Funny's funny, you two are going to be, and that was a fun feeling. I was like, all right, this, I'm not going to shake his hand, but all right, this was good.
Yeah, it's so fun to, like, have that. I like the Archie Bunker type of, like, the way he interacted with people. Now, he was supposed to be this really vulgar figure that was supposed to be reviled.
Right.
But America took to him and loved him.
Yeah.
And he just kind of talked honestly and he made fun of everything and everybody.
Yeah.
I think that's better than being so afraid to say anything.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I mean, that's kind of how I try to be. It's really hard today. I feel like you're kind of that guy too, where you're just like, I don't care. Let's bustle. You know, let's have fun.
Yeah. And that's where I've gotten to now is like, I realize that I just have to be me. I'll say, it's going to work or it's not going to work. But if I know like this is funny, then you're either going to get it or you're not. But that's not on me at that point, you know.
You should at least have the opportunity to try to make something funny. I don't care what the subject matter is. You're going to strike out probably more than you're going to get the hit.
Though. Yeah.
But you should at least have the opportunity to do that.
That's just it. I've always stayed on that anything should be able to be made a joke out of. That's my personal opinion. In fact, I love however many years ago, 20-plus years ago now, whatever, that I came out. A friend of mine said to me, he was like, you know, I came out to him. There was this kind of awkward silence. The first thing he says to me is, so how long before I can make gay jokes? And I said, And I was like, as long as they're funny now,
there's
no time frame on that.
Yeah.
Funny's going to be funny. And that's what I always feel like. Yeah.
That's a great attitude to have, man. What do you get into political humor? I know a few comics down here have tapped into, you know, what's going on. Do you bother with that?
I don't because, for me writing, if I'm writing a joke, I want it to be able to be used now and 5 years from now. So I don't do the political stuff much because, you know, it's going to be irrelevant in 2 weeks type thing because it's ever so changing. I've just written 2 new jokes that I'm working on that have a little bit more broader kind of button pushing issues to them. They're still going to be kind of used later type thing, but my concern is that a lot of political, for me personally, I'm not smart enough that I can write a new joke this week and write another new joke next week. So like my jokes need to last me for a little while.
Oh, really? Because I know a lot of comics now are going with the complete opposite of that. Well, the professionals, anyways.
Right.
They write the hour, you know, for that year, and they ditch everything. And it seems like comedy has gotten better from that model.
Oh no, I definitely could see that being the case because you're keeping everything fresh. I loved there's that documentary Comedian about Jerry Seinfeld, where after he did his Broadway show, he kind of junked all of his material and he wrote fresh, and it kind of follows him around writing and hitting rooms and getting back to 90 minutes of material. I love the idea of that. I'm not at that skill level yet. So, like, for me, because I know this is a long process, I know I've just got to get better at what I'm doing. And then once it becomes second nature to me, I love the idea of that. Yeah.
Yeah, you do. I mean, you do the writing group at Coconuts. What is some of the veterans? I know Danny Bevins is down there. He's kind of the ringleader.
Yeah,
Danny, what does he have to say about stuff like that?
Well, Danny's great. I mean, Danny, the interesting thing about that is, I mean, you got Danny, you got Steve Reynolds, you got some big people down there, BC, Tim, Terry Farmer, et cetera. But they're good because they don't necessarily try to define what you're writing or how you're writing. They're just trying to find the best way for you to say it. And they recognize a lot of times that how Danny's going to say a joke or how Steve's going to say a joke doesn't mean it's going to work for me on stage. So the good thing about that group is they work hard about, like, what's the best Jeff in that joke? And if I write something hacky, I love Danny will point out, he's like, you're smarter than that. He's like, other comics can do that joke, and you'll get a laugh. He's like, but you write smarter than that, so write that same joke just smarter. So they really do focus on the comic that's working on it at the time, and I think that's a great thing about it.
Yeah, there's a kind of a cool – I always want to go down there. I haven't done comedy in – I think the last time I did stand-up was September 2015.
Okay.
I mean, I've been, you know, hosting shows and stuff like that. It's something I would like kind of to get back into, but also I don't really have that. I feel like I would be cheating because I don't really have that fire. Like,
right.
That people are like, I want to do that again now, and they go to another mic, like – I was so relieved to be done with it. But I appreciate the art form, and I love hanging out with comics. And
right.
Stuff.
And I think it is funny because that's how I felt about acting. I was like, I get it, and I feel like I could probably get parts over some of these people, but they have that fire, and I was like, no. But at the same time, I think if you got on a stage again and you get those laughs, that instant gratification of knowing this is working, that is the kind of addictive part of it is like, oh –
But I did. I mean, I remember the show, and I did pretty well,
yeah.
I would say. And I was so happy. But I figured out that it was the relief of being done. It wasn't the elation of entertaining people.
Right.
I was just so happy. Oh, my God. Thank God that's
thank
over.
God that's over.
That's really what it was, yeah. And I could actually stay and hang because I did, you know, semi-well. And people
right.
Say, hey, nice job. That was nice to hear. But, yeah, it was more me just being like, oh, thank God that's done.
All right, so maybe it's not for you then.
Yeah, but I would like to do it every once in a while.
Yeah,
maybe.
Do it passively.
But then I feel like I'm cheating. That's not like you either. I feel like either, and maybe this is just me. I feel like you either got to be in or you got to be out.
No, I think
there's no in betweens.
That's just you. Because I think if you're funny, anytime you get on stage, I don't care if you're there every week or if this is your fifth mic in the week. I think if you're funny and you get on stage and you do funny, I think people appreciate that. I think, you know, they get the effort put in, and I think a lot of comics do appreciate the people that are putting in that effort and hitting shows and supporting other people, et cetera, which you do, the amount of supporting, you're there for that. But I think at the end of the day, the respect comes from if you're on stage and you're funny, then you're on stage and you're funny. Who cares if you do it once a month or once a day or once a week? At the end of the day, if you're funny, you're funny.
Yeah.
And that's what people like.
Yeah. You know, I've been thinking about maybe coming up to Coconuts one of these nights. It's now that I don't have this third job going,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to have more evenings free, and I'm going to have time to get more out there. So maybe I'll come, maybe even join you guys. Because I do. I have a book that I keep. You know, I still
right.
write stuff down every once in a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, I started it 2 years ago, and I have maybe 8 to 10 pages. But, you know. It's a slow process, and it's not my main concentration. My
right.
main concentration is the radio stuff. That's
right.
really what I want to do. That's what I have the passion for. So that's what I'm focusing. Because I used to paint and stuff too. Like,
right.
I don't do that anymore either. Just
that's
because
I walked in and I saw all of the paint, like literally bowing
yes.
your shelves with all of the paint stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I thought, did not know that about him. All right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I used to be really into it, and that's where I thought my passion lied. And then
right.
I started doing this, and I was like, oh no, I really like this.
Oh no, wait, this feels right.
So, and
yeah.
I knew that too. Like growing up, I knew what I wanted to do when I was a little kid. I used to play radio DJ on my boombox,
oh, right.
you know, and play the Space Jam soundtrack. It's just what I did, you know, from an early age. And then I kind of for whatever reason, I didn't have any direction. I didn't really have any mentors or anything. So it just ended up back at, oh, I'll get a business degree and just right. do that. And then once I graduated college, I was like, no, this is not, I want to do this.
Right.
So I've always taken the long road at these things, but, you know, I'm getting these little small little victories that, that will hopefully pay off down the line.
Yeah. Well, and it feels, I mean, you found your niche show, and that's good.
I don't know if I found it, but it's definitely, I'm working towards it.
Okay.
I feel like, you know, and I feel like I got something good going here.
And that, I mean, I can relate to that insofar as, like, I thought of doing comedy when I was 18, and I talked myself out of it. I was like, no, there's so much work into that. I respect those guys too much for how hard it is to write.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that. It'd be insulting to them if
so
I did that.
It's so much respect. Yeah. I have so much respect for the craft that I, like I said, I feel like it's, I would be a phony if I just did it at my leisure. Like, I feel like it's, you gotta do it, man.
But that, well, that's just it. I talked myself out of it at 18, at 25, and then at 33, I decided to do it. And I'm like, I should have done it at 18 though. I should have done it when I first thought, like, I want to. I should have just done it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, getting over your own hurdles, man.
Absolutely.
That's the biggest thing. Jeff Klein, thank you for joining me. Do you have social media or anything?
I am on Twitter as at that Jeff is funny, and on Instagram as that Jeff is funny. I figure if people write it down and say it, it might be true.
It's worth a shot.
It's worth a shot.
Jeff Klein, thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. Jeff Klein. Jeff, thank you for coming in. I forgot to ask him if he has any dates, but then I remember him saying that he's not getting booked. So I'm sure you'll find Jeff at an open mic or at a show, I'm sure, very soon. Thanks, Jeff. Follow him on his social media, that Jeff is funny, on Instagram and Twitter. Follow me, home_made_man on Twitter and Instagram. HMB Radio on Facebook. Radio St. Pete is just Radio St. Pete everywhere. Instagram, Twitter. And Facebook. So have a great week. I still got stickers, and I'll send some to you. Just email me, thehomemadebroadcast@radiostpete.com. Have a fantastic week. Talk to you some point in the future. Thanks. Bye.